Most of you know we're planning a workshop on the 20th and 21st of April, and details of that are on the bulletin board. On Friday night at 7:30, we will begin. We'll be talking about the components of an effective Bible class, Brother David Holder. And then Saturday morning at 8:30 through the noon hour, he'll be talking about various things. If you need the details, look on the bulletin board and try to make plans to be a part of that. If you are teaching or if you aspire to teach, I think you'll get something out of that. When Jesus came to northern Palestine, he was weary of the multitude, and so he ascended onto a mountain. And it was on this occasion that he delivered a sermon that is recorded in Matthew chapter 5, 6, and 7 that we call the Sermon on the Mountain. And some have referred to as the Magna Carta of Christianity. And in the midst of that sermon, there is a statement that is made in the 7th chapter of Matthew in the 12th verse that is probably one of the most well-known verses of the Bible, where Jesus said, "Therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets." We commonly refer to this as the golden rule. And actually, it is my belief that the golden rule has perhaps given rise to three rules of human conduct that we want to think about today. The first one is the iron rule. The second one is the silver rule. And the third one is the one that Jesus offers in Matthew 7:12 called the golden rule. And I would like to suggest that every one of us, to some degree, at some time in our lifetime, operate on the basis of one of these three rules as we relate to others. First of all, let's consider for a minute the iron rule. The motto of the iron rule is, might makes right. And there have been a number of individuals that operated on the basis of this principle. For example, in the book of Habakkuk, chapter 1 and verse 11, we notice that the prophet Habakkuk, referring to the Chaldeans that were going to come upon Judah, made this observation in verses 10 and 11. He says, "They scoff at kings and princes that are scorned by them. They derid every stronghold, for they heap up earthen mounds and seize it. Then his mind changes and he transgresses. He commits offense, ascribing this power to his God." I would suggest that the God of Nebuchadnezzar was power. In fact, history tells us that he was an egomaniac and that his desire was to conquer the whole world and to make slaves of all men. And thus he operated on the basis of the iron rule. In the Bible, we have an example of that in the book of Genesis. Cain, out of envy, took the life of his brother because his brother's sacrifice or offering was accepted and his wasn't accepted. Other great military leaders have used the iron rule. Alexander the Great, perhaps one of the greatest military leaders of all time, was a very ruthless man. In fact, he conquered in 12 years most of the antique world from Macedon to India, but it was set up on one occasion that he came to the city of Gaza, and he took the governor of the city. He bored holes in his heels. He tied a rope to him and drugged the man behind the chariot until he died. That's what I call an example of the iron rule. Others have followed. Julius Caesar was a great military leader, but his motto was, "I came, I saw, and I conquered." Others have also followed this same rule. For example, Charles Darwin basically, in one sense, gave respectability to the iron rule in his book, Origin of the Species. The real title of that book and the full-length title is The Origin of Species by Means of Natural Selection or the Preservation of Favored Races in the Struggle for Life. You get the sense of that? He tells us that man evolved, of course, from a lower form of being, and that the mechanism of that is natural selection. Or another way to put it is survival of the fittest. In fact, consider with me a quotation from Charles Darwin in his book, The Descent of Man. And I want you to notice what he says, and I want you to think about the fact that there are some people today who operate on that same premise. He says, with savages, the weakened body and mind are soon eliminated, and those that survive commonly exhibit a vigorous state of health. We civilized men, on the other hand, do our utmost to check the process of elimination, and our medical men exert their utmost skill to save the life of everyone to the last moment. Thus, the weak members of civilized society propagate their kind. No one who has attended to the breeding of domestic animals will doubt that this must be highly injurious to the human race. You get the gist of that? I would suggest that, without trying to get into a political thing, that many of these animal rights activists, I'm talking about the ones that are extreme, operate under the same premise. In other words, they put more value in the life of a whale than they do in the life of a human being. Survival of the fittest. That's the idea. Thus, Charles Darwin gave respectability to the iron rule. But we also find that there were others. Adolf Hitler operated on the basis of the iron rule, and we are well familiar with his policies in World War II, of killing millions of Jews in an attempt to develop a master race. Or perhaps in America in 1973, Roe versus Wade in the Supreme Court, that gives a woman the right to kill an unborn child to facilitate her own interest. I don't remember the name of the woman, but I was watching TV on one of the talk show shows this week on the cable news, and there was a woman there who was advocating the pro-choice advocate, and she very candidly said that the pro-choice view is all about the woman and her rights. You know, forget the rights of this child. He didn't have any, or she doesn't have any. And because of that, millions of unborn children lives have been taken. But you know, a lot of people operate by the iron rule. Bully husbands, bully fathers, bully mothers, bully children, and sometimes even bully brethren operate on that premise. Look in 3 John 9, and we have an example of that right here in the New Testament, in 3 John 9, where it says, I wrote to the church, but Diotrephes, who loves to have the preeminence among them, does not receive us. Therefore, if I come, I will call to his mind his deeds, which he does, prating against us with malicious words. And not content with that, he himself does not receive the brethren, but forbids those who wish to, putting them out of the church. In other words, here was a fella who wanted the rule. He wanted to be chief, and so he refuses the fellowship of those who were in fellowship with God. Thus we have illustrations of might makes right. The silver rule is a little more difficult to describe. Some have said that the silver rule is the golden rule without gold. Perhaps that's a good way to put it. The motto is, do not to others what you do not want done to yourself. That's the idea. Do not to others what you do not want done to yourself. Greek philosophers followed this rule. In fact, there were many of them who despised and hated slavery, but only on the basis of the fact that they hated it. You know, they didn't want to be a slave. That was the idea. In fact, the picture here is the picture of the priest or the Levite in the parable of the Good Samaritan that passed by on the other side, thus operating on the principle of the silver rule. But there are others that have also advocated this principle. The rabbi Hillel, and I'll read the quotation, said, "What is hateful to yourself, do to no other." Or in the apocryphal book, Tobit, Tobias says to his son, "What you yourself hate, do to no man." You get the gist of that? Whatever you hate, then don't do it to somebody else. Or the Chinese philosopher Confucius taught the silver rule. This is what he said: "Is there one word that will keep us on the path to the end of our days?" The teacher replied, "Yes, reciprocity. What you do not wish for yourself, do not unto others." Now, there are some say Confucius taught the golden rule. No, what he taught was the silver rule. That is, if you hate it, then don't do it to somebody else. There's something about the silver rule that is kind of has a unifying feature. And that is that it is completely negative, and it forbids a great deal, but it enjoins nothing. For example, if I were to operate on the principle of the silver rule, I wouldn't steal Lauren's purse because I know I would hate it if she stole mine. But on the same rule, basis of the same rule, if I found a purse in the mall that had $200 in it, it's the old, you remember how we were when we were children? Finders, keepers, looters, weepers. That's the silver rule. Too bad. They lost it. I have it. It's mine. I can keep it. That's the concept and idea of the silver rule. In fact, there's an illustration in our country. I don't know if you remember who Catherine Genovese was, but she was a woman that was living in a very respectable part of New York City several years ago, 1964. And on her way home from work at night, she was attacked. When she got to close to the apartment in the parking lot, she was attacked and stabbed to death until she died. And in the midst of her blood-curdling screams, not one of her 38 neighbors even picked up the phone to dial to call the police. Now, there was a Harvard professor that tried to justify their conduct. These two Harvard professors said, "Well, these neighbors, they didn't commit the same crime. Everything's okay." Or, people hesitate to enter a violent situation alone, but organization takes time. Or it is difficult for any of us to know how we would have reacted. Or heroic efforts frequently backfire. Or a collective paralysis may have seized the neighbors. I don't find any of those justifying the conduct of these people. But a lot of people live by that. Their mantra is, "It's not my problem. It's no skin off of my back." Or I have known even conservative brethren to say, in fact, this is real. I hate to say it, hate to admit it, but I knew an elder in a church one time who said, when a good friend of mine was trying to encourage the church to reach to the community, to reach the lost, and he said, "Well, they know where the truth is. They can come get it if they want it. We've got a sign on the building. Let them come get it." Or sometimes in neglecting a brother who may be in sin or have problems, well, we may say, he made his own bed, let him live in it. And that just sort of justifies us, and that makes me faithful. He just made his own bed, let him live in it. To me, the best illustration, though, of the silver rule and the contrast between that and the next one is in Matthew, the 25th chapter. And this is very serious, because in Matthew 25, you have a description of the judgment scene. I want to read all of it, beginning with verse 31. Matthew 25, and beginning with verse 31. When the Son of Man comes in His glory, and all the holy angels with Him, then He will sit on the throne of His glory. All the nations will be gathered before Him. He will separate them one from another, as a shepherd divides the sheep from the goats. And He will set the sheep on His right hand, but the goats on the left. And then the king will say to those on the right hand, Come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me. And then the righteous will answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? When did we see you a stranger and take you in, or naked and clothe you? Or when did we see you sick or in prison and come to you? And the king will answer and say to them, Assuredly, I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these of my brethren, you did it to me. Then he will also say to those on the left hand, Depart from me, you cursed, into everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me no food. I was thirsty, and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and you did not take me in. Naked, and you did not clothe me. Sick and in prison, and you did not visit me. And then they will also answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry, or thirsty, or a stranger, or naked, or sick, or in prison, and did not minister to you? And he will answer them, saying, Assuredly, I say to you, inasmuch as you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did it not to me. And these will go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous into eternal life. I would suggest that the goats would be acquitted by the silver rule. The silver rule may speak of justice, but the golden rule speaks of grace and generosity. Thus Jesus said in Matthew chapter 7 and in verse 12, once again, in Matthew 7 and in verse 12, Therefore, whatever you want men done to you, do also to them. For this is the law and the prophets. Consider with me, first of all, that the golden rule is a unique approach to human conduct. Now, some say Confucius first offered it. No. Jesus was the one that gave the golden rule. Furthermore, the golden rule is grounded in divine revelation. Jesus plainly says, This is the law and the prophets. The golden rule is an out-of-this-world principle. It did not originate with man. It came from heaven. It came from God. And it is one of the most wonderful ideas ever given, and ever thoughts ever gained it, founded in faith in God, and founded in the very worth of every human being. It ought to be my motivation and your motivation for everything we do and how we relate to others. Third, it is universal. It applies to every segment of life. Now, if I apply the silver rule to my marriage, I'm going to have problems. But if Nancy and I apply the golden rule, that is, her need to come before mine and my need to come before hers, you can have a taste of heaven on earth. Isn't it true of every relationship? Wouldn't it be wonderful if we practiced the golden rule? Everyone would practice that rule on the job. Wouldn't it be wonderful if everyone would learn to practice the golden rule in the schools and in the neighborhoods and in society generally? This simple but very profound statement can enhance any human relationship when it is practiced. Very simply put, Jesus said, Whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets. Next, it requires action. The golden rule isn't passive like the silver rule. It says, whatever you want men to do to you, you do also to them. It involves reaching out to those who are in need. And not only does it require action, but it commends itself to reason. It assumes that an honest person knows what is right and fair for himself. Jesus, in teaching his disciples, understand that they have a sense of responsibility, and it assumes their own moral sensitivity. And thus, it is extremely superior and can greatly enhance any relationship. You know, even the enemies of Christianity have commended the golden rule. For example, a couple of atheists, well-known skeptics. The first one, by the name of John Stuart Mill, wrote, "To do as one would be done by, and to love one's neighbor as oneself, constitute the ideal perfection of a utilitarian morality." Thomas Paine declared, "The duty of man is plain and simple, and consists of but two points: duty to his God, which every man must feel, and with respect to his neighbor, to do as he would be done by." Brother T.B. Larimore, whom I've read from, an old-time gospel preacher that many of you old-timers may have known or may have met. I'm not sure if he was before your time or not, but anyway. They said he was teaching on the parable of the Good Samaritan in Luke chapter 10, and he made an observation and said, you know, in the parable of the Good Samaritan, you have three individuals, and you have three individuals operating by three separate rules. The bandits, iron rule. We are several, and you are one. We find the same true today in gang activity, in terrorist activity. We are one. Or we are several and you are one. We're strong and you're weak. The priest and the Levite. The silver rule. Not my fault. No skin off of my back. And so instead of stopping to help, they passed by on the other side. The Samaritan, operating on the basis of the golden rule, had pity and sympathy on his brother. He stopped. He used his own animal. He paid for his own lodging to care for his neighbor. Therefore, let us applaud this great rule that is consistent with the very life of Jesus. The greatest example of the golden rule was the giving of the Son of God when he gave his own life so that I could live and you could live. Let us applaud it, but more importantly, let us accept the challenge of learning to live by it. If you're here today, the Lord has given and offered his own Son for your sake that you might live. He died that you might be redeemed from sin and from transgression and reconciled to God, that you might become his child and to begin the greatest walk that man can have, a walk in relationship with the Heavenly Father as his child. And if you wish to do that today, we want to help you. If there's someone here today who wishes to be baptized into Christ for the remission of sin, we invite you now to come to us.